Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Hello, and welcome to Dig This Trump Watch with host Professor Parker Pollack. Hello, Professor Pollack.
Hi, Pamela.
Trump Watch airs the first Saturday of each month at 9 a.m. I am Pamela Spoto, and also in the studio is Craig Boyer. We will be joining the discussion with Professor Pollack today. And we always have a lot to talk about, and every week, or every month, well, every week too, every day, the list gets longer and longer of all the potential topics that we have regarding Trump. So the topic for today is that Professor Pollack will evaluate the claims that President Trump has made America weaker again rather than greater, as his campaign slogan promised. This examination will include his policies, both foreign and domestic, during the past year, as well as self-incriminating exhibitions and behaviors implying that he is unfit to be President of the United States. Maybe we should get one of those caps, or more than one, that says, you know, making America weaker again.
Oh, yeah, right.
So Professor Pollack, you have so many choices about where to begin. I guess you will just begin.
Okay, sure, Pamela. I thought maybe we could take a look on the foreign side of President Trump's behaviors, and certainly finishing that segment, we can't forget to talk about North Korea. But
initially, not.
Really a big deal.
Yes.
So on the foreign side of his behaviors, we've, of course, got the Paris Climate Accord, and pulling us out of that agreement, I got a hunch, or I had the feeling that his level of understanding or information about climate change is really not much greater than someone who's in the seventh or eighth grade. And that his level of ignorance is equal to those scientists who have made a lifelong effort, that he is equal, his judgment is equal to theirs. It floored me. Go ahead.
Because I was thinking that, I mean, he made a statement like, oh, gee, it's cold outside. I'd like to see some global warming. Didn't he say something like that?
Yeah,
I mean,
he did.
What?
He did.
I mean, that is a doltish kind of comment.
Sure, sure.
It's cold outside without any relationship as the oceans warm, as the atmosphere warms, that creates more intense storms, both colder and hotter.
It's climate change, not global warming.
Right,
so
right.
it's incredible. And you're exactly right. I mean, I just get so upset about that you have a whole array of scientists around the world, climatologists.
All legitimate ones.
Yeah, right. Really. And so I think what he, and the people I visit with at the gym or at the grocery store or at Barnes & Noble, at the bookstore around town, Mount Shasta Library, I get the hunch that a lot of us, our neighbors and people that you guys may know also, confuse today's weather with climate change. Which, you know, it's like macroeconomics is a field of study. Microeconomics is also a field of study. And that's sort of similar to the way that climate change is a huge thing and the weather is micro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I was really concerned about him pulling us out of that the climate agreement. And then also wanting to pull us out of the Iranian nuclear agreement when the other six or seven parties to that agreement are fine with the way Iran is proceeding to go ahead and comply with the requirements of restricting their process of getting a nuclear weapon.
And the Trump administration really had to stretch to say that they wanted to not adhere to that agreement because Iran was doing everything necessary to uphold that agreement. So they had to come up with a term like, well, it's the spirit. They're not working within the spirit of the agreement.
Yeah,
what the heck does that mean?
I know. Just take a look at what's in writing. Let's live with what's in writing. Yeah.
And Iran has been very well behaved in that way.
The other countries are satisfied with their way they've been complying with the various parts of the agreement. So there are people who advised President Trump. I'm thinking of Secretary of Defense Mattis, who over the years, Mattis has had a real difficult time dealing with Iran from an objective point of view. I'm not sure how he got that position, but he was relieved of his, you know, his job as the head of Central Command, which is 1/6 of the world's surface. The United States has the world chopped up into 6 pieces. Mattis was in charge of one of them, Central Command, which is that area from the Caucasus over to Iran, around through the Levant, right around through the Middle East, over to the northwest, the northeast part of Africa. And I think it may have been his constant, getting after Iran and saying things that were really inflammatory about Iran that may have been the reason why he was asked to resign. He did. And so he then was available. Although, you know, when you hear Mattis interviewed today by the media, he doesn't sound like that nickname he had.
Mattis. No, he doesn't.
No. I've heard him 2 or 3 times now being interviewed by the media, and he sounds fairly reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if you compare him to Trump.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the comparison. Yeah.
That's for sure.
And Bannon et al., some of his cabinet may sound reasonable whole scheme of things.
Sure. Well, Mattis, he and Tillerson, I'm not too sure about McMaster yet, but Kelly and Mattis and Tillerson, those are the 3 guys I'm counting on. We'll probably come back to who we should count on.
They're considered the adults in the room.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we need some of those people there. The Iranian, trying to stir up things again with Iran, and I'm not sure whether Donald Trump, 1979 when 1953 when we overthrew their democratically elected government, Mossadegh, and we put the Shah back in power, our puppet, just like we 1953, 54, we did the same thing in Vietnam, in the southern part of Vietnam. And so we had this habit, or Eisenhower had a habit of finding puppets and putting them in place, although the puppet we put in Vietnam was found by Senator Kennedy to be Jack Kennedy, to be perfectly honest. But at any rate, the Shah being put back in Tehran, in the palace, and doing everything we wanted him to do, for 25 years, those people put up with it. And finally, in 1978, 79, they rose up. They had a religious guy who came back into town from Paris, and so that provided some sort of a incendiary spark.
Well, Professor.
Oh, here's something I thought was really interesting. I've been listening to some of what they've been protesters have been saying, in the Iranian protesters, and it's interpreted as saying they're shouting down with the Islamic State and give us a Shah again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard on several different occasions the interpretation of what they were saying.
So, which
out there.
Protesters are you talking about? Pro
the Iranian against the regime,
the government, okay.
Against the Islamic State.
Uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh.
Right. They don't want that Islamic State any longer.
But uh-huh, it's not ISIS. It's a government that's based on Islam.
Mm-hmm. Right. They don't want that any longer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And however, to pursue that a little bit further, though, the pro-government protesters, which I guess there are quite a few of them in Iran, are saying, you know, the West has been meddling, and which is true. I mean, it just as Professor Pollack is talking about here, and that was the question I had for you, Professor Pollack. You know, that we have had a slew of presidents, Democrats and Republicans, both, who are very willing to overthrow elected leaders around the world, and put in puppets, quote unquote. You know, is there any way that, do you see any way that could come to an end? I mean, that we just let countries, because it would appear that left-leaning governments, let's say Allende, for example, in South America, the U.S. just, they couldn't stand having a left-leaning government. And so they were helped in his overthrow and then helped put in a military dictatorship that just killed, I mean, tens of thousands of people. So my question is it possible that we could let, I mean, do you think the ideological mindset in the United States of most people would allow for a president and a government of the U.S. to walk the path of peace and diplomacy? Or would they consider that person just cowardly, mm-hmm. unlike Trump, who just wants to stand up and bully his way through.
Well, if you had a president who openly, and we'll get to the national security strategy in a few minutes, but if you had a president who openly sought peace accords where Donald Trump seeks aggression or expresses aggression, there is, of course, you guys know as well as I do, there is a faction in the United States who would start beating the drums, rattling the sabers and calling that particular president, he or she, all kinds of names.
Right.
And so it might be difficult for them to get that president to get reelected. There are people like that in our mix. You know, I'm thinking of, Democrat Warren, Republican Kasich, Democrat Basevich. There are potential people in this country who could serve as president who would not be like Bush Jr. or even Bush Sr. or Clinton, for that matter, mm-hmm. when it comes to, mucking around in other people's countries. Because those people have a history.
And just one further question, because this goes along in my mind with America becoming weaker, is that this Congress and this president is pushing for more and more military spending as if the military-industrial complex isn't large enough as it mm-hmm, is, mm-hmm. Which is it's huge, trillions mm-hmm, of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so I see that as a barrier to the path of peace, because there's so much money to be made on weapons, and Trump is selling weapons mm-hmm, all around mm-hmm, the world. Mm-hmm. So when you say that if you had a president possibly that was, more into negotiation, diplomacy, that person is going to confront a huge corporatocracy that mm-hmm. is making huge profits from war. Do we have a chance?
Well, we're as Eisenhower warned us back in January of 1961, be careful, folks. You've got a complex military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. We've heard the phrase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and it came to pass. I think he would probably be stunned at how severely it has come to pass. And when you look at the defense budget, and it looks like maybe Department of Defense has $550 billion, you have to remember that there are other places where money is placed in other departments' budgets that also serve the needs of the military. Mm-hmm. And so it gets closer to probably up around $800 or $900 billion by the time you include all those other agencies. So I think we have 16 spy agencies, and some of that's...
Oh, really? I didn't realize it was that many.
Yeah. It's like everybody has to have one, It's like all the arms of the military and so forth. So, yeah.
Maybe we need a spy agency. I'm just kidding.
Well, there may be one.
And let me just, since we're just, I'm taking just a pause here, remind our listeners that this is Dig This, Trump Watch with host Professor Pollack. And Craig Boyer is joining us in the studio, and I'm Pamela Spoto. And we are talking about Trump and possibly making America, the claims that he's making America weaker again. And this is KKRN.org, community radio. So
yeah,
go right,
right.
In.
Yeah,
go
thanks,
right
Pamela.
Yes.
Well, along that same line about trying to be a country that is known as much for peace as we are for aggression, I think if down the road, we're looking at India, we're looking at Brazil, and we're looking at China. These are the countries that are going to be the major players in the next, and they are right now. Mm-hmm. Brazil is the largest country in the Western Hemisphere. Canada's a pretty good size too. Anyway, mm-hmm. So you've got some huge economies there, mm-hmm. A lot of productive capacity, a lot of potential for peace or for war, and there are a lot of things that the United States can do to simply use those economies as trading partners without having aggression play any part of it at all. And, certainly some kind of trade agreements, sometimes those get a little bit contentious, and that's the nature of that game. That's what negotiators have to work out. But, down the road, and I'm not sure Donald Trump thinks about this much, that India and Brazil and China, China legitimately has a sphere of influence. It is the two Koreas, it is Japan, it goes to Indonesia, Vietnam, Southeast Asia. Okay, not Southwest Asia, but Southeast Asia, yeah. And for us to think that we can control all the activities in their sphere of influence, we're smoking something, and I think, well, it just got legalized, didn't it?
Well, according to what Attorney General Sessions, that the feds are going to come down on the states now, there's, you know, they mm-hmm. he doesn't mm-hmm. like that one little bit. Mm-hmm. I guess they'd rather, you know, promote the alcohol and tobacco industry. Yeah. I don't know.
I thought it was, it's always curious when somebody from the South, from Alabama, some of those folks do remember the Civil War, and some of them have never gotten over it. And so one of the arguments for those people of the old Confederacy was states' rights. Don't have the federal government putting their thumb on our back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the first thing Sessions wants to do is tell the states what they can do, what they can smoke, and what they can't smoke.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought it was really kind of odd that would happen.
Kind of ironic.
You know, there was a fellow on TV. Well, we'll probably get into this later about the Confederacy. We probably should have let them win. You know, there's an argument there that slavery was on its way out. Economically speaking, it didn't have much of a future. Maybe another program.
Well, you know, Professor Pollack, you touched on something here, and we may not want to go down to this path right now, but talking about India, Brazil, and China being big players in the world, big economies, and that the U.S. is not, I don't know how to say it, I believe the U.S. should not be meddling in all these affairs around the world. And I think Nikki Haley at the U.N. was a prime example. I mean, I just could not believe it. I mean, it came down for her to say, we are funding, we are paying you all this money. We expect you to support us, you know, and not vote against us. So she or the Trump administration were not listening at all to what almost all the countries in the world reacted negatively to this notion of Israel and Jerusalem and so forth.
Right.
And yet, and she's blatantly saying this. We're giving you money, then you do what we want.
We're
and we're going to remember you. And that is what Bush said about the Iraq War, getting into the Iraq War.
Sure.
It wasn't because they ethically wanted to go and overthrow Saddam Hussein. It was, we're going to cut off our money that's flowing your way.
Sure.
What a terrible thing.
Well, and Miss Haley, Nikki, is it?
Nikki Haley. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
A few weeks before the Jerusalem thing, she looked around the room there in the Security Council around the UN at a vote, and she said, now, remember, you better vote the way we want, because I'm taking names. Mm-hmm. And she had a pen and paper.
I know.
Oh, it's like, we're in charge of the world now. Come on.
So that is what I find most troubling.
It is.
And that is how I see the United States becoming weaker and weaker.
These countries aren't going to take it anymore.
Well, that's the thing. Good point, Craig. That how long will they take it? How long will they be willing to accept this?
At the end of their tether on that.
Yeah.
I don't know, because money plays such a huge role in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it does.
That and our military industrial complex is so incredibly large. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I would like to think that countries will just say, okay, no more. You know, we have our sovereign rights. This is how we want our government to be, how we want our people to be. I mean, look at how, I mean, people might be hearing me and say, well, that's not very American. But if you look at the countries that we've invaded in the name of democracy that are now failed states, the infrastructure of Iraq destroyed, Afghanistan destroyed, Libya destroyed, Yemen being destroyed. It just goes on and on.
Syria
destroyed. Mm-hmm. So it's not like that we are helping, you know, in terms of this regime.
Right.
And we accuse Russia of meddling.
Right. Well, also Latin America.
And Latin America.
Yeah, we've overthrown and have created havoc there, all in the name of bananas and coffee and minerals, precious metals, I guess it is, minerals. Yeah. I was kind of taken aback when President Trump started getting after Iran about the nuclear agreement. You know, you can understand why a country like North Korea or why Iran wants a nuclear weapon. If you're going to try to deal with the United States, there's only one way that you can do that. You need to either be nursing on their hind breast, or you need to have nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Either do what they want, or you bargain with them, and you can't bargain with America unless you have nuclear weapons. That's been, I guess, the lesson we've all learned over the years. And if you're Iran, Look at the neighborhood. Good heavens. Here you've got Pakistan, India, and Israel.
Both with nuclear weapons.
All three of those countries are surrounding you, and you're the only guy without the hammer. And so I don't think proliferation of nuclear weapons is the way to go. We need to try to talk to folks and see if we can't provide them with some kind of guarantees. How do you control Israel? I mean, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, something in Lebanon blows up. And they say they take credit for it underneath
the
table.
It's getting harder and harder. And this is another thing I think that makes America weaker again. I keep saying again, weaker, because Israel now, I mean, I guess Facebook has come out and they will not allow any pro-Palestinian videos or anything that shows that the horrific situation that Palestinians are living under, because Israel and AIPAC have lobbied against that. And so we are censoring, the U.S. is censoring in terms of our media, of the information that we get. Mm-hmm. And controlling Israel, it just doesn't look like that's going to happen, because they're doing exactly what they want to do. And they are censoring those that try to speak the truth.
And so for us, for our president to recognize Jerusalem as where we're going to put our embassy, is simply declaring to the rest of the world, especially the people in the Middle East, we're on the side of Israel. We favor Israel. We're prejudiced in support of Israel. Everyone over there knows that. But here's Trump with an open declaration to the world. Maybe we should thank him. He's being honest. I mean, this is the way it's been. Well, if you remember back, I was only in the third grade, but when Israel was created, the English, after World War II, they didn't want to have to be responsible anymore for those portions of the Middle East. And so they tried to work out some deal to get the new United Nations to take over and solve the dispute between the Jewish people who'd been moving in there in large numbers since the 1920s, living amongst the Palestinians in some level of aggression with one another. So England said, geez, we got to get out of here. We need to get back. We've been bombed by Hitler and, you know, for years. We need to rebuild our country. And so we need to turn this over to the United Nations. And at some point, the United Nations had a resolution. It wasn't the Security Council. It wasn't for final action. It was just a proposed resolution. And all of a sudden, Ben-Gurion leaped out of his chair and declared independence of Israel around some line that everything west of the Jordan River was going to be Israel, and with some areas around Jerusalem would be for Palestinians. You know, a divided country of about 8,000 square miles. I mean, it's the size of 1/10 of Utah. And so at that point, nothing would have happened. Ben-Gurion could declare whatever he wanted to declare. And right away, the day that Ben-Gurion did that, President Truman signed it.
And isn't it interesting, if when I look at maps, and it was 1965 or 1969 when this was coming about, so you have Israel as the small portion and the Palestinian territory being larger. Every decade, every year, Palestinian territory shrinks, the Israeli territory gets larger and larger. Every day, they're in violation of international law. Mm-hmm. But because they're building where they agreed not to build in Palestinian territory.
Yeah. Yep.
So how, I mean, because they're an ally, then, I mean, that is such a double standard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not sure why we need them as an ally. Or what does that mean to us?
Isn't it religiously based?
I think it's AIPAC. You mentioned AIPAC. American-Israeli Public Affairs Council.
Yes.
Every presidential candidate for the last 20 years has had to parade themselves in front of a convention of AIPAC. To promise that if I get elected, Hillary did it, Donald did it, if I get elected, we will protect you. Supply them with arms and weapons
and aid to them than any other country on earth.
And isn't it interesting they have single payer health care?
Yeah, we don't.
Isn't that sweet?
Let's give them more aid.
How could they do that?
Now it's becoming apartheid in Israel, Palestine. You know,
they're building
walls around the Palestinians, and they're walled in.
They call it Gaza, the largest open air prison in the world.
That's what it is.
And they're totally totally controlled. Their caloric intake is controlled. I mean, it's outrageous. Mm-hmm. But that goes back to, what about a free press? What about an unbiased press where we can talk about these issues, when we can think of ways where we can get along in the world that we're not? I really see it as the oppressed becoming the oppressor. So now that Israel is in the role of being the oppressor, and they're oppressing the Palestinians, and that's just not right.
No, and you know, we might be considered anti-Semitic, and we're not. None of us in this room are at all. But fair is fair.
Well, I mean, when you can't, I mean, how does that work? I can criticize Iran, I can criticize Russia, I can criticize all these countries, but I can't say any critical thing about Israel?
I can even criticize the United States, but it's kind of really dicey to criticize Israel.
Yeah. The anti-Semitic thing is always lurking in the background.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, it really shouldn't be that way.
And APAC sits on boards of colleges and universities, and it's just incredible.
Yeah. In fact, there's another story there about a professor, an English professor somewhere in the Midwest, who lost tenure over not supporting Israel strong enough. I'll have to check with somebody I know who knows more about it than I do.
Okay. So go right ahead, Professor Barlick. We keep jumping in here.
The other things on the foreign side of President Trump's behavior, the raid on Yemen didn't go well. If you remember, Mattis tried to sell Trump on that raid. We lost some Navy SEALs there. The whole purpose of the raid, as far as the American interests are concerned, is kind of murky. It was never explained why we were even going to Yemen with those raiders, with the Navy SEALs. So we've got Syria. We're lobbing missiles into Syria and nail several civilians in the process. With just trying to disturb things, according to the Trump administration. Well, he did disturb things. The surge in Afghanistan, I think that the military people that surround President Trump, that's Kelly McMaster, Mattis, those three guys, that they sold him a bill of goods, I think, on the surge on increasing troop commitments to Afghanistan. That's looking more and more like it's going to be a long, long-term effort to try to maintain control of that area. And it is 80% of the world's opium comes out of there, and most of it flows north.
How convenient.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it could be, the avenue for a pipeline. As India wants to grow, the pipeline is even called TAPI. It comes out of Turkmenistan, goes through Afghanistan, through Pakistan to India. And India needs oil if it's going to grow and become, a very, very powerful country. So, there are other things in Afghanistan. I mean, it looks like such a desertified country, but apparently it has precious minerals coming in huge quantity. The potential is just absolutely great. So you've got all those reasons lurking underneath. All that we hear about from various governments that we've had over the years that we've been doing that, from Bush Jr. through Obama, now this fellow Trump, is that we're promoting liberty, we're promoting freedom, we're promoting our national interest, or promoting national security. Those are all just fog. That's part of the fog that a government can create for its people, so it will feel comfortable about what's happening.
I mean, if we want their resources, we should pay them. It would seem to me, that's kind of what it's about. Okay, you have some precious minerals. Okay, well, how much are they? And so we do the trading, the exchange, the money. We just don't go in and bomb and overthrow a country so we can run pipelines or get oil.
We don't? Well, I didn't realize this.
I should have said we shouldn't be doing that.
Well, I was just curious about, wouldn't you have loved to have heard the conversations between those three military advisors that have Trump's ear, and what they were feeding him about the future of that? And there may have been some economic interests, not just military, some economic interests also that got a hold of Trump's ear and sold him on the fact that we need to stay in control of Afghanistan down the road for whatever it takes. And so we're now in the mode of training their troops, and we've been down that road before.
Training their troops, military incursions, military industrial conflicts.
We've been doing that for 17 years.
All of the energy.
It sounds like Vietnam.
It just seems like all of our capital, our goodwill, our energy has now turned into the war machine.
Mm-hmm. And what we haven't been able to do, or what Donald Trump hasn't paid much attention to, is rebuilding a country we destroyed the infrastructure in, that being Iraq. They still, if you look at electricity and sewer and schools and hospitals and government agencies, police and fire, potable water, you name it, that country is destroyed. And it was
a first world country.
Yeah. Yeah. Bush Jr. Created a disaster there.
Sure did.
And the idea that there was no plan in place when we went in there for renewal. Rumsfeld didn't even want to talk about it, and that's a whole other issue there.
But this is not the way, in my opinion, that you win friends and influence people. And if we look at Yemen just for a moment,
sure.
Because it is so tragic. And somebody asked, "Well, how can we put an end to this war conflict, right?"
Mm-hmm.
And the person being interviewed said, "The U.S. could just say no more, because mm-hmm. they are supplying Saudi Arabia with an enormous mm-hmm. amount of arms." And I mean, I think the cholera epidemic is going to be reaching 1 million.
Wow.
Famine is incredible right now because they've blockaded and shut off, you know, the way that the food comes in, because 90% of what Yemen needs comes in. They have to import that. But what is really, and this was on, Amy Goodman was talking about this yesterday. It was like, so the people are trying to grow their own food in the farmland. And that area is being bombed by Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
so the people are starving, starving. And we seem to think, well, that's okay. You mm-hmm, know, we're just going to keep mm-hmm. supplying. And I mean, I don't see how we are going to win the hearts and minds mm-hmm, of people mm-hmm. around the world when we do these kinds of things over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's an old story, really, for us.
Maybe it's winning the hearts of the oligarchs.
Yeah, there you go. Well, if we moved across the Suez Canal or to Africa, we had an incident in Niger where we lost a couple of, SEALs. One or two?
I think it was. The Navy SEAL.
Anyway, and you know, it makes you wonder, Niger? What the heck are we doing in Niger?
Mm-hmm. We didn't even know we were over there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole process here that's, it's in a book fairly well detailed about the CIA as our terrorist arm, and that they move into an area for one or who knows what the basic reasons are, probably resources or control of some group there. And so they start disturbing things,
right.
And the people get into factions because they don't want to be associated with America's special forces troops. And so then you have the factions, and then now the factions are fighting against each other. And so now we can call in the military. And that's happened over and over and over again since, probably about 1940, shortly after World War II. 48, 49, when Harry Truman converted the OSS over to the CIA.
Yeah. And Professor Pollack, I would like to remind our listening audience that this is KKRN.org, a community radio, Round Mountain, Bella Vista, and we are all volunteers and we are listener supported. And Professor Pollack, I wanted to ask you, we are going to take a music break either right now or at another in 5 minutes. What would you like to? Okay, then we are going to do that now. So. Enjoy, please, for...
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. As we take, 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 take. Like a good mother, Mother Nature keeps giving, but her heart must be ready to break. She's being abused and overused by her children who choose to ignore. There's only so much that she can give before she can give no more. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let's the land, and we boys in the water we drink. And we're the only known creatures in the whole universe with the ability to think. But we keep on thinking, happiness lies in how much we buy and sell. And more of paradise is lost, and only time will tell what will become of Mother Nature in the coming years. When we will have about 10 billion neighbors on the sphere, will our children's children wake up to the American dream? Or will it have become a nightmare beyond imagining? Let's dig our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's dig our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let me not greed lead the way. We use so much and waste so much. How much do we really need? And how long can a dream survive that seems to thrive on greed? A little pollution is so thick and dark and dense. It contaminates and poisons common good and common sense.
And welcome back to Dig This Trump Watch with host Professor Parker Pollack. I'm Pamela Spoto, and we're joined in the studio with Craig Boyer as well. So, Professor Pollack, what do you have for us now after break?
Well, I got to thinking during the break that I know several friends of mine live in other countries that I knew them. I met them in Reading, or I met them when I was a kid in Monterey County. And they live in other countries. And to hear them describe what it's like to live there in those other countries, I'm not going to move. I like living in the United States. I like living in California. I like living in Shasta County. And so all the things that we discuss here, and I know you guys feel the same way, none of us are, quote, anti-America.
No.
We have you. In fact, Pamela, you might be in the vanguard of people who feel a commitment to watch the government. Craig's the same way. Mm-hmm. That's our duty.
Yes, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. And it's the people who say, "Oh, America, love it or leave it." Those are those sound bites, as if you only have those two choices. No, I am not leaving the United States. I do think we can do certain things in better ways, and I'm going to be, you know, talking about that sure.
Yeah. And wherever people can do it, I mean, I feel very fortunate that I get to be with you guys on this radio program. But even if all I do is go to the gym and talk to people there, go to the grocery store, go to the bookstore, people that I know in those three or four places, they like to talk about things too. And so the more we can engender these conversations in the communities, the little, you know, mini communities that we live in, that's also an obligation that maybe our listeners could see that's something they could do too.
And I think that's really true. And sometimes the analogy I make is that if I never looked at my own behavior, let's say I just live my life and I believe everything I do is right, you know, and I just
you sound like Donald.
Yes, the malevolent narcissist. But the idea that I want to look at my behavior, I want to make changes. If I do something that is hurtful, I want to do more things that are positive. So I'm analyzing, you know, how I am in the world. That's what I think a country should do: analyze how they are in the world and how they are with the people. And right. I think that's so important. So I agree.
There are countries where, Putin's coming up for re-election this year. We're in the new year. Navalny is not, I'll be surprised if Navalny's still alive by the time they hold the election.
I will be too.
Yeah. So anyway, there are countries where you can't do what we're doing.
That's true.
We wouldn't make it home probably. So, last week, 10 days ago, ran into a lady who was from the Netherlands, from Holland. Mm-hmm. And things are a bit disruptive compared to when she was a young girl there or child growing up in Holland. And so some of the same disruptions that we sense in this country, they're also occurring in other countries. I hate to go back to Piketty, the book Capital in the 21st Century, but the ownership of capital in this world is concentrated in very few hands in this world, not just America.
Not just
and so you have this a consequence of capital being concentrated and controlled by very few people, the impact of that, the fallout from that, is beginning to be felt, not just in the United States, not just by the 30% of the people here who are at the wrong end of the pig. Is that the way to say that?
That's an interesting image. I have that in my mind.
So, at any rate, and maybe we could get to Piketty, and he put a lot of work into that book. It's 2 inches thick, you know, and he's looked at 300 years of history. Anyway, so I wanted to make that point that we are, all three of us, sense an obligation to make America be the best it can be.
Right.
Yeah, so enough, I guess. Anyway. President Trump's efforts to work in with the foreign countries, he's had a very difficult time with Canada, with Mexico, with England. He has an obsessive compulsion with the Soviet Union, with the Soviet Union, and we'll get a chance to get into that a little bit later, I guess, as Mueller proceeds. President Trump has insulted leaders in Germany and England and France and Australia and Mexico, Puerto Rico, North Korea. I don't know. The list goes on. He has praise for dictators like Putin, Duterte, and Erdogan in Turkey. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that he has done much for the United States as being the president when it comes to our image in the world, our ability to work with other countries. We're on very thin ice with a lot of the people in other countries, regular citizens in other countries. And so I think that we're in worse shape since he's been president than we were before he took office in those areas that we've talked about. So there is one thing that we didn't mention, and that's, of course, North Korea. December 18th, President Trump gave the National Security Strategy. And every president has done this since probably Eisenhower, I guess. I think they feel an obligation to do it. And so usually what it is, the president, or he has people that write these things for him, I guess. I'm sure Trump had somebody write his. But the president's tone, the president's view of the world is shown in this document every year when a president does it. And so normally what you would, if you just took Bush Jr. and Obama, their statements are very considerate, are very unifying to the rest of the world. We want to work together for common goals. That whole tenor, that whole sense that we're in partnership with you guys, we're not the boss. But the one that Donald Trump wrote or had written and the one that he presented on December 18th, contains faint echoes of Adolf Hitler. If you get a chance, you could read a summary of it. It's online, but it's, I made a note to myself here. It invokes anti-immigrant themes. It's woven in a fabric of America's culture and values. And then, quote, we will stand up for ourselves and we'll stand up for our country like we have never stood up before. Now, that does sound like President Trump. It's always the extreme. It's always so effervescent. We're going to restore the economy by building up our military and the American arms industry. It's incredible that he actually said those things to the rest of the world. I couldn't get over it. I made some notes when I was reading it, and I thought, wow. So when you take a look at Russia and China, he is saber-rattling to those guys.
Right.
Watch out. We're the boss. And so when you look at what happened with he and President Trump and Prime Minister Premier Un in North Korea, there are all kinds of reasons why what Donald Trump has done there in his foreign affairs behavior is so emblematic of his personality. That the last thing that he said that I read was a couple of days ago, that he has a bigger red button.
Yeah, one of his many tweets. My red button is bigger than your red button. How many months before that he said, you know, we will just with what fire and fury destroy you. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm, this is not a normal thinking person. This is not a logical person that is thinking about getting along in the world.
No.
And Korea, North Korea, I mean, was destroyed already by the United States during the Korean War. And so Trump is saying this kind of stuff. And I just want to back up just for a second. I guess Trump, at the beginning of his presidency, met with, I think, four presidents of Central American and South American countries, four of them at a dinner, and said, well, don't you think I should bomb Venezuela? And they said,
what?
No.
Wow.
And you don't want me to bomb Venezuela? And so this is kind of, I mean, where is that coming from? You know, he's going to destroy North Korea. His button is bigger. Let's bomb Venezuela. Mm-hmm, yeah, go ahead and knock the heck out of Yemen. I mean, let's make the military budget huge. I mean, what does this mean? I think the man has lost his mind.
And in terms of his relationship with Kim Jong-un, I guess that's correct, I think he's being played by the 35-year-old leader of North Korea.
Is that how old he is?
Yeah.
He's very young.
Wow. Yeah. Very young. He was educated in Switzerland, which is kind of interesting. He has a Western, maybe that's how he got hooked on rock and roll and our old movies and things like that.
Basketball,
there you go. Rodman.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. So anyway, I think our president is being played by this young fellow. And I'm sure, if that's true, that from Un's point of view, from the North Korea's point of view, I think we've said before, if you want to deal with the United States, you have to have nuclear weapons. And from the standpoint of the North Koreans, let's say that they're saying this, we have played with the United States, for example, make a deal and then we break it. Mm-hmm. Then they have sanctions. Then we make another deal with them, and then we break it, and so then they put the sanctions on us again. And every time we do that, we get more and more leverage. We're closer and closer to a nuclear weapon. And number two, sanctions don't hurt us. China buys coal from us. Our workers still go to Africa and Asia. He has quite a trade in slaves that he enslaves his own people and then shops them out to various places in the world, and so in Asia and Africa. Yeah, so sanctions don't hurt because our economy still plugs along. They may hurt for a little while, but we have enough deals under the table. He sells drugs. He sells endangered species animals. He sells weapons, and he sells slaves, or rents slaves. And so most of that's under the table. The United States will not attack us. The United States will not risk it all with an attack on us and the South Koreans. Because the United States is rich, South Korea is rich, and the United States doesn't want to blow it all. And that's another part of their logic. And fourthly, China wants us to exist. China and Japan and South Korea, these are the real powers in Asia, and we want to deal with them. And you notice that South Korea and North Korea are talking with each other.
They just started, right.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then fifthly, finally, if we give up our nuclear weapons, you know what happens. Look what happened to Libya. Look what happened to Muammar Gaddafi. He gave up his armaments and tried to settle things.
Iraq, the same thing.
Yeah, in Iraq, they allowed the inspectors in.
Right.
When you do that, the United States comes in and kills you.
Mm-hmm.
Picks you over. Is there any reason why we would give up our nuclear weapons?
He would. I think that Kim would never use them. It's just an insurance policy to make sure that no one overthrows his regime. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that we have to do anything at all about this whole thing is absolute nonsense. We didn't do anything about Pakistan or India. Why in the world do we have to do something about little North Korea? No, we don't.
They already have them. Yeah.
It is interesting. The leader of North Korea may not use them, but I wouldn't put it past Trump in some ways to he just gets something in his mind 1 hour and he changes his mind the next hour and it's really rather incredible, I think. Mm-hmm. And I do want to mention one thing about sanctions, though, is that, you know, when we sanctions do have, I mean, in the past have had devastating effects on countries. And if we look at Iraq, and like 10 years of economic sanctions, you had 200,000 children at least dead. I had read 500,000, but Professor Pearl keeps reminding me it was 200,000 children killed. I mean, because they weren't letting in, I mean, it's antibiotics, medical equipment, all, and food supplies. And so it just, economic sanctions can be mm-hmm. really, really devastating.
Yeah, on the people. Yeah, not on the leaders.
Yeah, on the people. On the people. It is so terrible.
Yeah, it's like the sanctions that Clinton imposed on Iraq. Yeah, you mentioned the death toll among children.
Yeah.
But the leaders ate just fine.
Yes, yes.
And there was all kinds of oil being smuggled out of that country, going into Turkey.
It is so bad.
It was almost laughable. I mean, they were dripping. going across
the anyway, oil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So well, go right ahead, Professor Pollack.
You know, we're coming up towards the end of our program, and there was one thing we've been wanting to do, we said we were going to do, is take a look at people who are claiming that that President Trump isn't fit for office, isn't fit to be the president. One item popped up the other day. This book came out in October. I think it was October 3rd. And the title of the publication is The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, and it's a compilation of the opinions of 27 psych experts, psychiatrists, psychologists, people like that. A doctor, another psychologist, psychiatrist, Dr. B.X. Lee, put this book together, the 27 opinions from these other people, and it's there. They have a commitment, professional commitment, to warn the public. They call it duty to warn. And there's an old rule that they used to abide by, and they still will, I suppose, called the Goldwater Rule, because they used to get after Barry when he was speaking kind of odd, with odd policy recommendations and things, that they thought maybe he was a little over the edge. And so they came up with this rule, well, let's not do this, you know, unless we actually have the person on the couch. So at any rate, they do have this, they think, a duty to warn, and they've come out with the 27 opinions about why he's dangerous, and it isn't, they don't take it lightly. There's a phrase in the book that they're afraid that the president will unravel. Now, I don't, you know, I think that's a term that they're using because you and I, you know, we think we know what that means when somebody's unraveling, that somebody's losing their mind. They're going berserk. They're uncontrollable. At that point, should it come down to nuclear weapons, I'm pretty sure that the three or four adults in the room will find a way to restrain the president should anything like that happen. I don't want to scare various people, but there is the other book that came out, Fire and Fury, by Wolf. Brian, I got this link from one of our listeners down in Carmel. Strangely enough.
Well, and, good.
Yeah.
That's in the news.
KGO has a talk show host, Brian Copeland.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Brian Copeland read through a multiple page analysis of this book, Fire and Fury, about the Trump White House. And what Brian's opinion of the analysis is that the book confirms everything that we've heard. The president is a paranoid egomaniac who is semi-literate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's quite a threesome.
Yeah. Semi-illiterate.
Egomaniac.
Paranoid and an egomaniac, yeah.
And I think maybe he forgot one of the things. Sometimes I used to associate with psych people when I was working in the health center over there.
Yes.
And one of the things they used to talk about is that people who are paranoid oftentimes also suffer from delusions of grandeur. And that otherwise, why would anybody be after me? Well, it's because I'm so special. So it's Brian probably could have thrown that in there too. And he also mentioned that Trump's family, if you read through the book, or at least through this analysis, the New York Review of Books, you'll come away with the feeling that Trump's family and friends know that he's not fit. And they're not willing to step forward, I guess.
Well, Professor Pollack, what was the name of the first book? It's The Dangerous Case. What was the
Of Donald Trump.
Of Donald Trump.
Yeah. The author's name is Lee.
Okay.
And Lee. Yeah. Good. So the book's effect, I guess, The Fire and Fury, President Trump is absolutely beside himself on what to do, whether he's I don't know what they think unraveling is, but he has told people they can't bring their cell phones to work. So, interesting reaction. You know, there are people who you might as well have them leave their left hand at home. I mean, it's such an important part of and the president's press secretary yesterday said, or maybe it was this morning, anyway, recently, Huckabee, Marsha, Sarah?
Sarah Sanders Huckabee.
Thank you. Yeah. That she said the need for that restriction of these cell phones is for security, that we have to protect the security and the integrity of the White House high-tech systems.
Right.
And she thinks a lot when she before she talks. She uses some really nice sentence structures and words. I'm impressed with how she conducts her job. I don't like the thing she said, but she's impressive.
I don't know that I heard this correct excerpt, but it was one of these two books. And the image that stuck in my mind from the person being interviewed, this excerpt was that Trump is in his bathrobe watching Fox News for long periods of time, you know, he's kind of wandering around. And I don't know that that's true or not, you know.
Out of the book comes stories that that he eats a lot of food at fast food restaurants because he knows that they prepare the food ahead of time. They don't know which burger he's going to eat, and so he can't be poisoned.
Right. I'd heard that he was worried about being poisoned, yes. Yeah. And then I'd heard also, but this was, and I think this had to do with psychiatrists or psychologists as well, and I'd never heard this before, maybe you have, that because of the he's taking a particular medication to grow hair, and that medication can affect cognitive abilities. And he's been on this medication for a period of time. I mean, all of these things together are really, really worrisome.
Well, he speaks in word salad.
Yeah, I ran across that phrase. Yeah, it doesn't mean much. There's a distinct possibility, based on some of the my other past experience was working with a lot of people who had their backgrounds, professional backgrounds, in learning disabilities.
Yes, yes.
And based on his absence of really being able to identify social cues, the fact that he would rather have his foreign policy information come in pictures, that he is apparently not a reader. He may be suffering, from dyslexia. He is, like so many people who have a learning disability, smart as a whip. He may come out through on those tests as having an IQ, you know, very high. And all of that helps those people develop coping skills. And I'm sure that, in some of your classes, you may have had students who qualify for their books on tape, but they're not blind. They're LD. They're learning disabled. Mm-hmm. And so they'd rather get the information in through their ears, not through their eyes. And so maybe Donald Trump has a learning disability.
Well, I wonder why the term narcissism continually comes up in terms of describing him. And part of that has to do with what you were just saying. And there's always a narcissism is a negative enough, in my opinion, of and in itself. But the malignant narcissist, the malevolent narcissist. But the narcissist is a person who is just, as I understand, just concerned about self. It's just about self. Nothing else is important out here. Mm-hmm. It's just me. And then myself might not even be that strong inside myself. So he has this bullyish nature, this narcissistic nature. He doesn't really care to listen to what people have to say.
Well, that would go along with not in such an exaggerated form that we see in Trump. But some of that would go along with the coping mechanisms for a student in the first grade, as Donald was, who was a problem child. Maybe the eyes weren't picking up things as he was. They tried to teach him how to read. He became a problem in elementary school. They had to ship him off to military school to finish his K-12 education. And so some of those behaviors, those coping behaviors, are protecting self-esteem. That's how the LD people that, and you know them, you know, we worked with them, the learning disability specialists that we knew, that's what they would argue if they were sitting here, that it's in younger people in the, you know, in elementary school, they're trying to somehow protect self-esteem. And I think President Trump loves adoration. Who doesn't? But to organize your day
to an excess.
Yeah,
he does to an excess.
To organize your whole day around gaining it.
I mean, even when he was really furious about Steve Bannon, and then Steve Bannon said all of these kind things. Oh, I just support him day in and day out, And then he said, well, you see, he turned around just right away, so you can just look for him to come back into the fold with Donald Trump in the future.
Well, I just had heard that because Bannon came out with some negative comments just very recently. Now Trump is saying, well, he lost his mind when he left the White House.
He lost his job and his mind.
He lost his job and his mind. Right. Okay. And Professor Pollack, we only have about 30 seconds left, so would you like to make any finishing comments?
Sure. In past Decembers, there was one big item. In December of 71, Daniel Ellsberg was indicted for releasing the Pentagon Papers. 7,000 pages of secret documents that made it clear there was no way we could win the war in Vietnam. This is 1967. The study went through from 1945 to 1967. The Pentagon concluded there's no way we can win. And so that happened in 1971. Interesting trail, and we could pick it up in another program when we try to review past Decembers. But
yes, I would really like to do that, especially with how the media is being controlled and is controlling right now. So, Professor Pollack, I want to thank you so much for hosting our wonderful show, Dig This Trump Watch, and I want to thank Craig Boyer, and I would like to thank our listening audience. This is KKRN, a community-supported radio in Bella Vista, Round Mountain. Bye for now.